College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandy.
Lane Kiffin is back in the SEC. Dabo found a way to talk about free fuel yesterday. Is this the best set of quarterbacks in the history of the playoff, and why the one seed was the biggest story this weekend, but history has not been kind to the one seed when we're talking about the brief history of the playoff? Great to have Kirk Herbstreit join us, and we do a podcast every Monday. Last Monday, Herbie's with us. Then on Tuesday, he goes to Tuscaloosa for an interview with Tua and his family. He flies back that afternoon to do a SportsCenter hit. I don't know how he got there in time. Then Friday, he's in Santa Clara, flies overnight to Atlanta for game day on Saturday morning, watches the SEC game, then goes to Indy for the Big Ten championship game. Then he flies to Connecticut for the ranking show yesterday. And now you're back home. So how was your week, Herbie?
Oh, it was fun. It's what it's all about. It's championship week. And the Tua thing kind of popped out of nowhere. So I had a chance to go down and visit with him. And then, as he said, the rest of it was a bit of a whirlwind. And starting with the game Friday night where Oregon looked like the Oregon team that I think a lot of people expected, including myself, most of the year after we saw them open up with Auburn. But yeah, man, it's one of those weeks where it's just bang, bang, bang. And you're sleeping for a couple hours and your adrenaline's going and your passion for the game. And that's about all you got going for you. And I made it home, you know, it'll be a memorable week for sure.
Yeah. The dust settling, and we'll talk a little bit about Tua in your conversation a little bit later on, but you saw firsthand LSU and what they did against Georgia, and then you saw the Ohio State comeback and what they did against Wisconsin in the second half. Did the committee get it right between 1 and 2 when it comes to the seeding?
I felt at the beginning of the weekend going in that Ohio State was really the most consistent team, and I understood why the committee looked at that consistency and gave them the nod. Also thought it was still open. I thought it was so close to going into the closing weekend that I think the committee, rightfully so, looked at it and thought, all right, let's see how these teams play and then let's evaluate where we are. And I don't think Ohio State necessarily, when you look back at it, being down 21-7, third tough week in a row where they played Penn State in an emotional game and then at Michigan and then Wisconsin for the second time. By the way, the Badgers are a good team and they had a chip on their shoulder about the way they played against Ohio State the first time. And so to have to do that back-to-back weeks, they're down 21-7, and they end up scoring 27 unanswered. I don't think the committee looked at that and said, ah, well, we got to dock their status, bring them down a notch or two. I think what Ohio State did was an incredible accomplishment. I just think when the committee, for only time they all get together is this week, and they watch LSU completely dominate their number 4 team, Georgia. You can agree or disagree. The committee felt they were number 4 and they blew them out, right? And they're all together and then they get their rankings together and they start to look at where's Florida going to fall? Where's Alabama going to fall? Where's Auburn going to fall? Like where are these teams that they played, not including Georgia, where are they all going to fall? And they ended up with 4 teams up in their final top 13. So I think when they looked at, even though Ohio State had 5, if you include Wisconsin twice, in the top 20 to top 25, I think those 4 wins in the top 13 ultimately gave LSU a slight edge to put them at 1. And I felt Saturday night after I traveled all those places you'd mentioned, stood on the sidelines and watched LSU and Georgia, stood on the sidelines and watched that great Ohio State comeback. I felt that I wouldn't be surprised if the committee flipped it and put LSU at 1. So when they announced it, I was not surprised at all. And in fact, if you look at the logic that the committee is asked to use, it makes sense. Although it's the slightest of margins, I have no issue at all with LSU being 1 and Ohio State being 2. And now we got our showdowns. The great thing about this is it's subjective analysis to get us to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And now go play. Yeah, you might not like being the 2 seed, or Clemson, you might not like being the 3 seed. Guess what, man? You got 2 weeks to go practice and go get ready. 3 weeks to go get ready. And get ready to go roll and play the game and shut everybody up. Go win. You know, it's not like the old BCS era where you're at number three and you're stomping the ground and you're upset. You're number two and number three, and Oklahoma's number four, and Oklahoma can shut everybody up too. So you might be frustrated, but at least your team's still playing. And if they're as good as you think they are, you get the last laugh. They get to go out and play the game and win a couple games and raise that trophy and be the national champ.
And keep in mind, the number one seed has never won the college football playoff, which I find surprising, even though I'm aware of that stat. But every time it happens and you go back into it and you're like, wow, 5 years, the number one seed has never won the playoff. It shows you, I think, that the gap in the talent and how close it is when you look at the top four. I am just grateful we do not have a BCS system right now, because then Clemson would be on the outside, and that would stink for everybody. And we get to see this play out on the field in front of us. You had the chance to see LSU's defense, and there was a lot of talk in the last month, especially, you know, what happened in the Ole Miss game. But let's not forget that we're talking to 18 to 22-year-olds coming off that emotional win in Tuscaloosa against Alabama. Not making excuses, just adding context and nuance. And they give up a ton of yards against Ole Miss. What have you seen from LSU's defense the last 2 weeks to think, okay, I don't have as many questions as I think the committee had about the defense in the last few weeks?
All right, here's my take on this. And I've been watching LSU defense and always respected them for years and years and years. And as I watched them early in the year, all of a sudden, I called the game in Texas. And it was the night that I think all of America learned, including myself calling the game, on that 3rd and 17, when LSU was in 4-minute offense, and conventional wisdom, when you think of LSU, they got a lead late on the road. Let's run the ball. Let's kill the clock. Make Texas use their timeouts. Punt it. Make them drive the ball the length of the field to beat us. That's LSU's style of football. And what did they do? Put the ball in the hands of Joe Burrow, went 5 receivers, spread out Texas's defense, attacked 3rd and 17, run the ball, right? No, we're going to throw the ball, the game winner to Justin Jefferson. That sent a message to all America. And it also sent a message to the LSU defense, I think subconsciously, like, wow, we're really good on offense. We're used to defending these kind of offenses. And guess what? We have one now. This is crazy. And I really think that not they intentionally did it, but it's human nature, that I think they didn't play with urgency. I think they're guilty of realizing, the players. I think Dave Aranda jumped up and down and tried to get their attention and say, we still got to be great. But the byproduct of having an up-tempo offense that can score and score fast and put up 45 a game is it sometimes negatively impacts your own defense. And I would contend it's not the athletic ability or the skill set of these players that play on LSU's defense. I think they struggled to play with urgency, and they struggled to be a kind of a complement to this newfound toy of Joe Burrow and Joe Brady and company. So I think it took them time, and also had to deal with injuries. Mm-hmm. They were banged up first half of the year. But I think it took them some time. And I think when the committee flipped Ohio State to one, and the rationale, kind of the national narrative was, well, Ohio State's a more complete team, offense, defense, every week. LSU, hey man, they got a great offense, but man, have you seen that defense? When that happened, I think Dave Aranda probably stood up in front of his defense and said, well, boys, I guess we're not any good. Mm-hmm. I guess good thing we've got Joe Burrow over there in that other meeting room, because we're not doing our job. And I think that week they went into the Texas A&M game, and Grant Delpit was healthy, and I think it was a perfect storm of LSU waking up on that side of the ball. And if you remember, that was a couple weeks ago, they played A&M. I think they had 6 sacks, and they had 3 interceptions against a really good Jimbo Fisher offense led by Kellen Mond. And I think that's when the light went off, like, hey, we can be good too. So I think they've been playing with a chip on their shoulder the last 2 weeks against good opponents in Georgia, and especially A&M's offense. And I think that's who they feel that they should be going into the playoff against Oklahoma and Jalen Hurts. So that's my take on LSU. I think it's a byproduct most of the year of relying on Burrow and that new offense of style and point production. And I think they had a wake up call after they got called out. And I think they're healthy. And I think those two things have allowed them to put their best foot forward. And we'll see where they are by the time we get ready to watch them play OU in Atlanta.
So you saw them firsthand. You saw Ohio State firsthand. When did you arrive in Indy? Was it time to see the comeback complete? Or
yes. Okay. Yeah. We got there at about the second quarter, and Ohio State had just scored. Might have made it 14-7, and I think Wisconsin scored, and it was 21-7. And it was – so we got there about the second quarter, middle of the second quarter, and great scene. You know, it's very interesting to go in the same day within a couple hours to go from the SEC championship in Atlanta to go to the game in Indianapolis. You know, I think the one in Atlanta is kind of on a different place, kind of a different pedestal because of the buildup and the intensity. And you know, I think there's a long tradition going back to, I think it was 92 with Antonio Langham when he used to play it down in Birmingham when he had that pick six against Shane Matthews. I think that was the first SEC championship. So I think there's just been, you could almost close your eyes and think of different games over the years. And so their fan bases, I think they travel and get excited as much about the SEC championship as they do the semifinal or the national title. And I think in the Big Ten, it's good. I mean, Ohio State and Wisconsin have great fan bases, and they're excited about it. But it definitely did not have the same kind of buzz or feel. Interesting thing for me is I'm very good friends with Barry Alvarez and a lot of the Wisconsin folks. Sometimes I feel like it's my family, you know, away from home, and they're such good people, and I've gravitated towards them over the years. And Gene Smith, obviously, at Ohio State too. But I'm down there, and a couple buddies from Wisconsin say, hey, let's go up to Alvy's suite. So I went up there at halftime just to say hello to Alvy and some of the folks from Wisconsin. It's 21-7, and they're high-fiving, and, you know, they're feeling, what do you think? What's going on? How about that? 21-7. I was like, well, you know, it's a 60-minute game. We'll see what happens in the second half. And I left and went back downstairs, and here, oh boy, here comes Ohio State. And they've done that all year. They've been a second half in-game adjustment team. And, you know, Ryan Day and his team deserve a ton of credit for coming back, digging that hole and then keeping their poise about him and 27 unanswered to win that game.
It's fascinating too. And then you have that matchup of the Georgia kids, Fields versus Lawrence. Ryan Day yet to lose. Fields yet to lose as a starter. Lawrence yet to lose as a starter. So many great storylines in the Fiesta Bowl. And we have literally the next few weeks to talk about that. And I'll get your initial thoughts on both matchups, but let's focus a little bit on this one question that I found fascinating yesterday. I did the 3-hour pre-show leading up to the rankings, and we had 8 analysts coming in like a hockey line change. And all 8 of them, they all believe that Clemson is the most dangerous team. LSU and Ohio State still in the mix and still in the conversation, but they all believe Clemson's the most dangerous team. Who do you think is the most dangerous team still playing?
Clemson makes a lot of sense to me because I think Clemson could be better this year than they were last year. You know, last year they were 15-0 and people have talked about that being the best run in the history of college football. You know, those defensive linemen all coming back, the seniors to win that national championship, and they did. They accomplished that goal. I think a lot of people thought, okay, they're going to lose all those players, and what kind of team are they going to be this year? They're going to have to rely just on Trevor Lawrence and that offense. And I think by the time they had a little scare in Chapel Hill, from that point on, they've been as dominant as anybody. And you could make an argument that when you look at them on film, they're better than they were because Trevor Lawrence is a better player. ETN's stronger and faster and more knowledgeable. The line looks to be as good, if not better. The receivers, I mean, Justin Ross and T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers. I mean, and they lost Hunter Renfrow, lost some good players, but I mean, they're as good, if not better, on the perimeter. So I look at them defensively, and of course they missed that defensive line, but man, watching Skalski at middle linebacker and Isaiah Simmons and Kayvon Wallace and Tanner Muse, and the corner play has been incredible. So yeah, you can make a case that, and they're sitting there playing with a chip on their shoulder. When was the last time you watched a defending national champ be mad at the world? You know, and in college football, that is gold, just gold. If a coach can manipulate a situation to make his team collectively feel disrespected. I don't care what year you go back, watch the post game interview almost every year. Nobody thought we could do this, yep. But you know, we were out to prove everybody wrong. I mean, that's like the secret sauce.
But Dabo keeps tapping into it too. You won 28 straight
Number three. Congratulations, guys. You did something that hadn't been done since 1966. Defending national champs, won all your games, and you're number three. So,
I love it. I actually love it.
He's like a chef with recipes. You know, he's just stirring, stirring the pot, and those players, they're believing it, you know, and so I could make a case for them. I could also make a pretty strong case for LSU. You know, Joe Burrow, you talk about the eye of a tiger. Talk about a focused team led by Coach O. Coach O, do you think you're one? Do you think you're two? Where do you think you're going to be? We're all worried about it. Hey, man, any place, any time. I don't care what we're ranked. Just tell us where we're going. Tell us who we're playing. We'll do a little game film prep. We'll be there. Tiger's going to be there. Go Tigers. Like, they just, I love, and Joe Burrow, he's going to win a Heisman Trophy. He's going to hold that thing up and be like, yeah, all right, won the trophy. I'm out of here. I got to get, you know, he's just, he is on a mission, and you got to really respect that and appreciate this whole LSU team and their energy. It's just, it's fun to see, and it's challenging for teams to match it. So you can make a really good case for LSU. And then you look at Ohio State with Ryan Day. He's got a quarterback that's about as efficient as anybody we've seen play the game. And he's got a running back that's as talented as any running back in the country. He's got his best offensive line that Ohio State's had in maybe 15, 20 years. And they've got a lot of confidence on that side of the ball. And you got Chase Young, who I think is the best player in college football, leading a defense that is remarkably improved from 2018. I think it's the area they've improved the most. And so they come into this. It's the first time, it started in 14. It's the first time that I think you could sit there and say 1, 2, and 3, every one of them have a chance. And oh, by the way, we're not even talking about Oklahoma. Anytime you have a quarterback that's name is Jalen Hurts, who's going to do squats after games and doesn't smile and is really, again, another guy that's incredibly focused, he's going to give you a chance to win. The knock on Oklahoma, the concern about Oklahoma is, can their defense hang around, give them enough of a chance? They're clearly going to have to create turnovers to have a chance to pull off an upset. But you know how powerful it is. They're going to hear for 3 weeks, why are you even in this game? Mm. How do you stop Joe Burrow? Do you have a chance? You know, you hear that day after day, week after week for 3 weeks. You show up in a bad mood. And we've seen upsets in these bowl games. I think this would take, you know, a major effort of everything, the stars aligning for OU to beat LSU. But I think anytime you're doubted in college football, it's sometimes can be an equalizer. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a fun run here.
And it goes back to, you know, the question I had in the beginning, that this is the most talented set of quarterbacks that we've had in the playoff. And when you look at it, like not just on Saturdays, but the Sunday talent that's going to be on the field as well. When you look at the future of all four quarterbacks, the one thing that Jalen Hurts has that the other three do not have as much, I'll just say as much, because Trevor, of course, went through it last year, is the idea that he has played in this will be his fourth playoff. So he's fully aware of the big moments and the biggest stage. And also, when he's on that field, he has already seen an SEC defense. He already understands that the speed is maybe a little bit different and the physicality may be a little bit different from the Big 12 transitioning now to this SEC LSU defense. And that experience is a little bit different. And I think that I don't think it's like going to be the complete advantage, but it's one thing that separates, I think, Jalen Hurts from the other three quarterbacks coming into this conversation in the semifinal. And back to Burrow here. Just keep this in mind. The player who won by the widest margin, the Heisman, was Troy Smith, Ohio State, back in 2006. He took nearly 92% of the first place votes, and it still stands, that record. I think that Joe Burrow is going to break that. What do you think when you talk about the widest margin of first place votes?
I haven't met anybody in the last 2 weeks that said they're not voting for Joe Burrow. I've heard people say, well, Chase Young, could be the most outstanding player in the country, but I haven't heard anybody say they're not voting for Joe Burrow. Not that you're supposed to divulge who you're voting for, but, I think that the 06 year with Troy Smith, I remember that year very well. He had a good year in 05 and then just took off in 06 and had a few moments that were those Heisman moments. So you could see that going into that weekend, it was very similar feeling. He's going to win the trophy. You didn't know it'd be by that big of a margin, but I think that's in jeopardy. I think I'm just more interested in seeing who the other yes. folks will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's going to be there? And again, people get very confused. ESPN does not invite people to the Heisman. ESPN televises the event, but ESPN is told by the Heisman Trust, hey, because they do all the accounting and all the numbers, and then they look at the percentages of the votes, and wherever there's a most significant drop, they'll decide to bring 3, 4, 5 people. And, you know, it's a pretty cool honor to be invited to New York City, even if you're not going to win the trophy, and be a part of the ceremony and the history of that. Even though you go in knowing you're probably not going to win it, just being there is kind of fun. And so I think the trust would probably take that into consideration. You don't want to have Joe Burrow there by himself. So where do you draw the line if it's that kind of a drop off? But I think it will be by a landslide. I think Joe is very deserving, and his story is incredible. You know, when you talk about him not being recruited, and his dad and brothers played in Nebraska, and Nebraska didn't even look at him, and his dad was a defense coordinator at Ohio University, and that was his only offer. And until Tom Herman came down and saw him throw at a summer camp, and eventually, yeah, we got another scholarship. Let's ask his quarterback out of Athens to come in. I think he's a 2 or 3 star. He's got a little bit of ability and comes to Ohio State, you know, and backs up JT Barrett and battles with Dwayne Haskins and ends up losing the job once JT Barrett graduates and decides, I've got my degree. I love Ohio State, but I want to try to play somewhere. And he was going to go to Cincinnati to go play for Luke Fickell, who just left Ohio State to take the Cincinnati job, and out of nowhere decides to go to LSU. And I don't think very many people, if you watched him play last year, I think that's what people thought he was. There's Joe yep. Burrow. That's it. And they've changed their offense. They bring in Joe Brady, and Joe Burrow has just taken off in this system. He would tell you, this system is more like what he did in high school and even at Ohio State. Last year was him playing more left-handed, under center, huddle, two backs. That just wasn't his comfort zone. And this year they went back to that. And God, the kid, that's why I think he's got that look in his eye. That's why he has this chip on his shoulder, no matter how much success he has, is he remembers all that pain that he's been through and how many people doubted him. So his story is remarkable. And I think he'll get the last laugh when he holds that trophy up Saturday night.
And the highest compliment that I've heard over the past weekend was Brady was asked about his system and how similar Drew Brees is compared to Joe Burrow and his system, and Joe Burrow is compared to Drew Brees and his system. And he goes, they're absolutely similar. And I was like, wow. I mean, we can make these comparisons, but Joe Brady's fully aware of it because of his time with Drew Brees. And yeah. That's where he's coming from. So
yeah. When
you hear the coach who works with Drew Brees is now working with Joe Burrow and says they're similar, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. And Drew Brees, one of the best to ever do it. And I think the thing that gets overlooked at times with Burrow, and even Drew in his prime and his younger days when he was at Purdue and early in his NFL career, is the athletic ability and just the pocket awareness. Sometimes it's not a crazy scramble where he's, you know, taking off and creating the way Lamar Jackson might do, but it's just subtle movement. and a feel. And yeah, sometimes it is getting out and scrambling for a first down. He did it against Georgia a few times. And then it's other times where he's just like, remember the 3rd and 17 against Texas? It's just move, boom. And he's got that accuracy to go with it. And those receivers never give up on a play because they know that there's always a chance that if he's still standing, he's going to find me. And that's a great compliment to hear that from Joe Brady.
Yeah, there was some mayhem on the field too. Of course, he's had a handful of Heisman moments, but maybe none bigger on how he scrambled and found a way to get past two Georgia guys, you know, seeking to destroy. And he finds a way to not, it's just his ball placement and also where his eyes are always down the field. And then he connects 71 yards on that play down the field in the SEC championship game. And it's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment that, you know, it might need a name change here since the playoffs are now officially set. But I got to tell you, the playoff predictor nailed it when we talk about the top four teams that we're going to get in. They got in. And, of course, that is LSU. That is Ohio State. That is Clemson. And that is Oklahoma. But you were there. You saw a little mayhem from the games this past weekend that you think threw the All-State playoff predictor a little bit off. And it started, of course, on Friday night.
Well, I think the mayhem, it did it if you look back at the weekend, because we talked, boy, if Georgia upsets LSU, the door is shut. The four from last week will be the four this week. It'll just reshuffle the numbers. And Friday night, I saw mayhem. I saw Oregon dominate Utah in every aspect. And think about Utah, what they potentially were playing for. Now, once LSU ended up winning, if Utah, they're 60 minutes away from getting a Pac-12 championship and a ticket punched to making it into the playoff. But instead, it's Mario Cristobal and the Oregon Ducks and Justin Herbert and the skill and the speed and the defensive line. They just were able to be more physical and more athletic and just a dominant win, which Oregon goes on to the Rose Bowl. Utah is out. And then you get to the Big 12. Oklahoma needed a lot of help over the last 3 weeks. They needed Alabama to lose. They needed Oregon to lose, because if Oregon went into that game with one loss, Oregon would have gone ahead of Oklahoma. So they needed Oregon out. They lose at Arizona State. You talk about mayhem. Oklahoma is a kind of a great example of their journey over these last 3 weeks or 4 weeks since they lost to Kansas State of mayhem, surviving some close calls. Then they go to the Big 12. Really, really good game. Matt Rhule's team, injuries at quarterback. They hang around. You're like, they might win this thing. It's in overtime. And OU, of course, finds a way to get it done. And they sit back and watch. And, of course, Georgia ends up losing, which opened the door there for Oklahoma to be able to go on to get what they needed. And the mayhem wasn't done, because we talked earlier, 21-7, Ohio State's down. Not that it would have necessarily impacted maybe the rankings, but you're still trying to win a ring, right? You're still trying to win a conference championship, and Ohio State scores 27 unanswered to secure a Big Ten championship and a spot in the playoff. And Ryan Day is off to a great start in his first year. So playoff, not Saturday, playoff weekend had a lot of mayhem, and you know mayhem, it could show up on your turf at any time. So get better protected with Allstate.
We'll be back in a minute, but first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Okay, Kirk, we're going to have plenty of time here, I think, to break down, you know, the conference, the semifinal matchups. But I do want to get your initial thoughts, just quick thoughts here on the Peach. LSU versus Oklahoma, of course, the Jalen Hurts story and Lincoln Riley and what he has done and finding a way to get in the playoff up against Eddie O. And then the Fiesta, Ohio State versus Clemson, Fields versus Lawrence, and the Georgia kids, the quarterback squaring up. What are your initial thoughts when you when the announcement was made? We knew the matchups. What did you think about him?
Well, my first thought was, who's going to be one, Ohio State or LSU? Well, once it was announced that Ohio State was two, you knew that LSU was one. And you thought, okay, they played in Atlanta for the SEC championship. They're going to play in Atlanta for the semifinal. And then if they win that game, they play in New Orleans for the national title. I mean, it's kind of a magical run for LSU. And that's why that number one versus number two thing was so big, especially for them, because you're talking about home field advantage in a big way in both of those games, if they're able to beat Oklahoma. So the Sooners are essentially playing a road game when they go into Atlanta. They have great fans and they'll show up, but all those other tickets that you think, you know, you only get whatever it is. What do they get? 15,000, 20,000 mm-hmm. for their fan bases. All those other tickets have to fill up some way. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see it 70-30, favoring LSU, potentially in both games. So that's big. The thing I thought about is, can Jalen Hurts hang around with Burrow? Can they possess the ball? Can they keep Burrow on the sideline? Can their defense create turnovers? Because it's going to take all that, I think, in order to make that a competitive game. And I think, you know, they definitely can. Will they do that? I think remains to be seen. And then with Ohio State and Clemson, you know, last time Ohio State played against Clemson out in the Fiesta Bowl, it was a blowout. It was an embarrassment for Ohio State. So I think Ohio State will show up with a chip on their shoulder. I think for Clemson, they're going to show up. We just talked earlier with a chip on their shoulder because they feel very disrespected. And even this morning, I'm watching TV and people are talking about, man, Clemson hadn't played anybody. They're not any good. We don't know. You know, they've never seen anything like Ohio State. And it's just like, man, you're just adding fuel to the fire for the Clemson team and then for Dabo Swinney. So I love that because Ohio State's going to be in a bad mood and Clemson is going to be in a bad mood. So I think that has almost a feel of a national championship game, really, Ohio State and Clemson. So we'll see who survives that one. And then it's showdown time for the national title on the 13th.
In between, any bowl games that stand out when you saw matchups? I'm not looking for analysis. Just is there a game or two that you're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm a big – the fan in me loves when the Big Ten and the SEC go head-to-head, you know, just because there's always bragging rights, it seems like, on the line. And so I think that's always one. I think Michigan against Alabama is a game that stands out for obvious reasons. You know, I think that anytime you have an Alabama brand and a Michigan brand, going head to head, that's going to generate a lot of excitement. So I think that's a good one. I haven't been able to dive into all of them, but, that one's a good one. Let me see who ended up playing in the Citrus or the Outback Bowl?
Outback is Auburn versus Minnesota, another SEC good Big Ten, and the two teams that have big storylines this whole season.
Yeah, that'll be a big one. And you know, these bowl games, a lot of it, it's about who's going to show up with the the mindset of, I want to be here. A guy's going to play in the bowl games. Are they going to skip the bowl games? You know, like, I think that's a big part of it. But, yeah, I typically tend to enjoy as a fan watching the Big Ten go against the SEC and get to see who has the bragging rights.
Yeah, back to the Bama, Michigan also. We're going to figure out in over time the next couple weeks, find out how many players are going to play in that game, because Bama could have a bunch of juniors decide, hey, we're going to skip it and think about long term and getting ready for the draft. And that played a huge role for Michigan a year ago as they got ready for Florida. So that will be one quiet storyline. personally, for me, the Military Bowl is going to be just the, I'm a Temple guy, you know I am, but
yeah,
it's against Mac and my boy, Mac Brown in North Carolina. We're already texting each other, so that should be an interesting matchup in the Military
Bowl.
Oh,
that'll be great.
Yeah, on the 27th. So I can't win. I got my family, you know, of course, my allegiance to my school, and of course, my family with Mac Brown on the other side, and he's got a special quarterback in Sam Howell and that freshman. You know, amidst Herbie's crazy week, he was able to sit down with Tua Tagovailoa and take his temperature on whether he's staying at Alabama or turning pro. We'll hear what Herbie took away from that conversation. But first, let's pause for a word from today's sponsor, AT&T.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chest with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Speaking of quarterbacks, you had the chance to sit down and an emotional conversation with Tua, and as well as his parents, who I love. And I just love how transparent this young man is. Because when you're talking to him, he's very candid about, hey, I just don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this is going to play out. And what's your gut tell you in that conversation? You think he's coming back?
I don't think it's a slam dunk that he's leaving.
Mm.
I think before I went there, I thought it was. You know, I sat down with him and his mom and dad, and I thought, you know, first of all, he can't walk for 3 months, you know, so think about the injury, think about when it happened. So that's December and January and February. Then he starts to walk slowly, maybe work in the pool a little bit to try to get, you know, his leg back and, you know, and then maybe, you know, the next month or two to start slowly building up the strength of it, right? And trust that the procedure that was done. So I think there's a long journey back. It's a positive story because I think he's in great hands, and I think, you know, 100% recovery is very, very likely for him. So that's all great. But I just sensed, man, like he keeps telling himself, I got to take the emotion out of it. I can tell you how he went out as a fan out there, and you hear narratives, get your money, go to the NFL. Not all players view the world like that. Just to let you know, they're invested in their college experience. They're invested in, you know, how things are going. Like, look at Christian Wilkins and company. They all could have gone pro. You know what? They weren't done. They didn't like what happened the year before when they lost Alabama in the semifinal. They wanted to come back. And you can laugh about it. You can not agree with it. They wanted to come back and give it one more go because they cared about winning. It might sound crazy, but in college football, these players still care about winning and their legacy and how they go out. And they came back and they won. And I just felt like listening to Tua, you know, there's part of him that is not comfortable with how he went out. And if you think about the year before, how he went out, that, you know, not out, but mm-hmm. how the year finished, mm-hmm. he didn't win a title. He won it the year before when he came in relief for Jalen. Then he took over in all of 18, had a magical year, unbelievable year, and ended up getting blown out by Clemson. Comes back this year, has the injury. So I don't think his career has gone the way he had hoped. And there's part of him, as much as he's looking at the money, there's part of him that's looking at, man, can you imagine if I come back and Dylan Moses comes back and this guy comes back? You imagine what we could do next year, man? Mm-hmm. Like, he said that to me. So there's part of that that he's evaluating. So he told me that the players are going to sit down as a group and have a meeting and talk about it and figure out what direction they want to go. And I don't know if they're all going to go one way or all going to go the other. I have no idea, but I can just tell you what he told me. But I would guess it's still 50-50 right now. And then in the next few weeks, he's going to let everybody know his intentions. But I think he's honestly really back and forth at this point.
Man, the selfish part of all of us is we'd love to see him back because college football is better for it. He's such a dynamic star. But also, we want the best for him, regardless of whatever decision he makes, right?
Yeah, let me just tell you this real quick. I'm sitting down with his parents first, and I sat down with the intent was to sit down with them for, you know, I had about seven questions that the ESPN folks had for me to talk to them. Most of it centered around the injury against Mississippi State, how they felt about it, him having to go through the procedure again after Tennessee, how they dealt with that, once they saw him down, you know, getting down to him. And they kept talking about, you know, how emotional it was and everything they had been through. And they kept talking about, and we would go down and try to talk to him in the locker room. And here's Tua making us feel better. We're trying to console him and he's making us feel better. Like, mama, don't worry, you know, and she kept talking about it. And his father kept talking about how much they appreciate his attitude and his spirit. And so I just asked, I said, where does the spirit come from? You think somebody's born with that? Do you think he learned that in your culture in Hawaii? And his mom paused for a second, and then she just started weeping, like just crying about basically how much they love Tua, how much they appreciate, almost like, why do we deserve a son like this? Why, what did we do to deserve this? Not just his abilities, but his spirit, most importantly. And she was just overcome with emotion. And even his father, who's very stoic and very proud, he was as well. And to hear their, you know, we all as parents love our kids, but to hear the, how grateful they are for him was very powerful. And that wasn't in the, we can edit a piece at some point and get some of that stuff, because I thought it really spoke volumes about all these players we cover. I love covering them all. It's so much, best part of my job is doing that and getting to know these guys. But he's wired different, man. It's so unique. And I'm so fascinated by the Hawaiian culture and the way he was raised and how much family means to him and to their family. And it's just special. You know, he gets thrown a curveball in life. Mm-hmm. He hits a ball 400 feet. You know, he gets thrown a slider. Boom. Like, no matter what happens to him, he's just one of those guys. Maybe you know people that are this way. No matter what happens to them, they got a positive answer for it. Something negative happens, going to find the positive to it. Like, that's who he is. And so he doesn't feel sorry for himself. He's not sitting around feeling sad. He's finding just ways to lift up the spirits of everybody, you know, including me. You know, I got done with him. I felt better just about life, you know, about people, about humanity when I got done sitting down with him for about 45 minutes to an hour. So it was an awesome visit. Just a special kid. We wish him all the best. Whether he comes back to play for Bama or obviously goes on to the NFL, he's one of a kind. He really is.
Young man, so authentic. I after watching a little bit of the segment with you and him, and then we had you on, we go to commercial break, and I texted Galu, his dad, and I was like, man, I'm not sure what you guys did, but I need to take lessons on how to raise kids because you have a great son. I had the chance to experience some stuff with him in last January at the Walter Camp Awards, and you're just around him and his dad and his family, and you're just like, you're so authentic when kids are given a lot of things early on, and he's grateful and a humble kid, even though he is the star of the room, right?
Yeah.
It's a powerful and message.
His dad is everything, you know, and his mom is everything to him. Like, his family is, but, in a Hawaiian culture, the father kind of sets the tone and you respond in a very, basically, yes, sir, kind of approach. You know, it's like, you're the boss. Whatever you say is the way it is. You know, it's not, well, I think this. It's like, just not that way.
Yeah.
From the time they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 20, 21, 22. I don't know if it goes on forever, but you know what's best, dad. Yep. Okay. I mean, I remember Tua telling me, yeah, I thought I was going to go to USC. I thought I might go over here, but Dad said, God's calling me and you're going to Alabama. It's like, okay. So I'm going out. Here we go. Going to Alabama.
Yeah.
Here we go.
That is, so, and that is not normal. You know, it's refreshing to hear, but it's not normal.
Yeah, not normal.
In this day and age. Before we wrap up the podcast, we're going to get to questions in a second, but I do want to get your thoughts on some coaching moves that we saw in the last couple of days. Lane Kiffin coming back to the SEC now at Ole Miss. Mike Norvell now at Florida State. Sam Pittman now at Arkansas. Pittman, former Georgia associate head coach and OL offensive line coach. And Eli Drinkwitz now going to Missouri, former Appalachian State coach who's 36, and they go 12-1 this year, and they win the Sun Belt. Well, quick thoughts on any of the names I just mentioned, especially the idea of Lane coming back to the SEC for another chance.
You see that video of his son Knox when they were videotaping him, and they said, hey, we're going to a different job. And he said, which one? And he said, Ole Miss. And he said, yeah! And he jumped in the car. He's like, SEC. It's like, man, that's hilarious. The little guy, he's so excited to go back to the big time, you know, in his eyes and the SEC and get a chance to go to Ole Miss. You know, I think Ole Miss rolling the dice here. I think there's tremendous upside on what he can do and what he can do as a play caller and the job he'll do in recruiting. He's going to shake it up a little bit in Oxford. He's going to shake it up in the SEC West. We had him on our selection show, our ranking show the other day. And, he said all the right things. He sounded mature, but I hope he doesn't bring his act that he had, at FAU. Mm. You know, that I just don't think that's in his best interest. I don't think it's in Ole Miss's best interest. And I think, maturity, and kind of just go recruit and go work hard, and nobody's ever going to question his ability to call plays, work with quarterbacks. He's extraordinary in that area. I just hope he doesn't try to be, you know, cute with some of the things he says publicly that I don't think help him or the team that he's coaching. So I hope that's behind him. And if it is, I think it's an interesting hire and a big opportunity for him. I love the Mike Norvell hire. Mm. That one really stands out to me. I think Florida State needs kind of a young, energetic, go get 'em, great recruiter, great offensive system. Guy that's going to work the students on campus and get them excited about football. And he's got the energy to do that. And they just need that right now. They need a lot of positive mojo. And I think he'll provide that. I'm really, really hopeful and excited about getting Florida State and that great tradition back, playing meaningful football again in Tallahassee. So I think that of all of them, that was probably the one that stood out the most to me at this point.
And it's a home run for Florida State. And Noles fans, if you're listening, just put on some tape the last couple years of Memphis, the way the offense looks. He develops quarterbacks. He does a great job at the skill position when it comes to recruiting. And we talked about how good of a job Florida State is. If you're just doing your job at Florida State as a recruiter, you're going to get so much talent. I just want Florida State to be relevant again in the ACC.
Me too.
Right?
Me too.
I think when they're relevant, when schools like Florida State, schools like Texas, Notre Dame, of course, Michigan, when they're relevant in USC and that conversation, college football is just so much better for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. And I think Florida State, not just for the ACC, but you and I grew up in an era where we used to see Bobby Bowden standing down there on the sidelines. Yep. And there was something very refreshing and fun about the Florida State swagger. You know, Miami always gets looked at as the Miami swag back kind of thing. But Florida State, man, they used to take the field. Remember when I first started on game day, it was in 1996, and Bobby Bowden, they were right in the middle of either being in the national championship or winning it. It was like every year. And they would, part of their warmups, they'd get done, and then they would walk from the goal line, and they'd be arms locked from sideline to sideline, and they would just walk from the goal line to the 50, or maybe it was from the 50 to the goal line. And that was kind of the end of their warmup session. And you would look at the other end of the field, I don't care who they were playing, it was like, oh, man.
Yep.
Can we go home? Like, do we have to play those guys right now? I mean, they just had such an intimidating, ability about them every time they took the field. And I'm hoping, man, I hope we get the Noles back. It'd be great.
Time for your questions here. We have a couple of them, really good ones when it comes to, you know, what you've experienced this week and what you're going to experience this coming, weekend. The first one is, you were able to watch a game from the sidelines this weekend, a couple of games, and I know how much you like that. On last week's show, you talked about how much you loved watching games down there. If you could watch any team in college football from that vantage point, who would it be and why?
Man, I don't know if there's necessarily like just one team that you like to watch from down there. I just love standing on the sideline watching the game because I love hearing things and seeing things. And there's an energy down there that you just don't get when you're up in the seat. And I could sit here and say LSU or Clemson or Ohio State or any of these teams. But I love them all, man. It's impossible. It's like saying, which one of your kids do you love more? You know, what I love is standing on the field and just shoot it into my veins. You know, if I did that for an NFL game, I'd be like, all right, we did this for 10 minutes. I'm good. You want to go back up to the seats? Like it just wouldn't be the same. But when I do it for a college football game, you know, I'm just in my element and loving every moment that I'm down there, and I'm not really BSing down there. I'm paying attention and absorbing so many things. My antenna's up and I'm just picking up on things. And I think that aspect is what I enjoy most. It's not necessarily this team because of that. I just like this week, for example, I told you I'm going to do Army Navy for college game day. Typically we take a train up to New York City and we do the Heisman show. This year, I don't have to do the Heisman show anymore. I think Tom Rinaldi and Fowler and those guys are going to take care of the Heisman show. And I am beyond excited to stay in Philly and to watch the Army Navy game from the sideline. Yeah, neither team is chasing the rankings down. I don't really care. I'm just going to be in. I'll be locked in, standing right there, watching these players, watching the emotion of that game. This will be one of the highlights of the year for me. And it has nothing to do with conference championships or rankings or who's in or who's out. It's just college football, guys that care. Guys that are playing hard for 60 minutes, trying to knock each other's blocks off, getting up, helping each other up, play the next play, play the game the right way. And I'm going to be right there taking it in. And that'll be what it's about for me.
That segues into our final question here. As game day's rolling into Philly this weekend, a listener wants to know, it seems only right that me, would share my favorite spots to grub on.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you that. I'm glad they're asking because I wanted you to let us know.
It's where should Kirk, Bear, RD, definitely not Pollock, eat when they're in Philadelphia? Yeah. And I know you want to get a good sandwich. I mean, there's a lot of Italian joints that you could find. And the cool thing about a cheesesteak in the Philadelphia region, there are a lot of big name places. And I'm not talking about the tourist traps, and I think we know who they are. I'm talking about there's a lot of big name places on every street where they're big names to the locals, but not big names to people, you know, coming in, where you could find like a little mom and pop's place. So you can't go wrong, but I compiled a list of cheesecake places recently, and it generated some buzz. There were some people that came out of the woodwork and that were a little upset that their place and spots were not mentioned. But I think that you can't go wrong with a place like DeLisandro's, John's Roast Pork, which is near the stadium in South Philly, Steve's Steaks, Jim's Steaks, Max's Steaks, Mama's, Ishka Bibbles, which is on South Street near Jim's. But if you want, and those are cheesesteak places where you can get also pulled pork and a variety of different type of sandwiches and great cheesesteak places. But if you really want to experience, all right, my taste buds need to have a whole bunch of different things, go to the Reading Terminal Market, because you're going to get donuts, you're going to get pulled pork, you're going to get cheesesteaks, you're going to get like apple dumplings. You're going to get phenomenal soft pretzels. Mm. And it's all in this
What's
one place.
What's the name of that one?
The Reading Terminal Market. Just walk in and they have a bunch of shops all around. And you literally walk around and you could get anything you want. And it will hit the spot. You can't go wrong. Trust me.
Okay, I'm on. I'm on now.
You know, and of course, I'll send you all this stuff via text.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you're
I
in
appreciate
Philly,
that.
For sandwiches,
yeah.
Reading Terminal Market, outside of the cheesesteak places I mentioned, those are the hot spots to go to.
Awesome. Let me just close with this. So when you and I grew up, especially with me going back to, you know, a few years, Rocky Balboa, right?
Yeah.
The Rock coming out of Philly. And so when he climbed the steps, and I think, was it the first Rocky when he climbed the steps when he's in training to kind of come back and fight Apollo?
Yeah, it's the second one when he's going up there. Yep.
Going up the steps. Yep. Okay, going up the steps. So I'm like, I tell Fitting, this is years ago, I'm like, oh man, we gotta go for a run. Like, I want to go for a run through the city. Such a cool town to run in. But I said, we gotta include the steps part of our run. It was, all right, I'll show you where we're going. Drew Gallagher's from Philly's kind of telling us where to turn, and we're running. And then you start to see the steps, right?
Yep.
And we run towards the steps. Now you got to remember, I was probably 9, 10, 11, 12 years old the first time I saw Rocky. And I thought those steps would be 400 steps. Like that, what was that? Panda when he's going up the stairs.
Yeah.
He's getting up the stairs. Like I was so surprised that it wasn't like a lot of stairs. I thought it would be a lot more steps.
No, they do a great job shooting it. And by the way, if you watch the actual movie again.
Yeah.
And then you try to go all to those spots.
Yeah.
There's no way. It's like a 12 to 15 mile run where you're going all over the place.
He
just combined the best spots of Philly. And then he put it together in a montage, but there's no way you're doing that real run.
I know. Especially with those big, heavy gray sweats on.
Yes. and he's wearing Chucks.
I know. Exactly.
Yeah. Art Museum's great. And those steps are iconic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We actually got my engagement pictures done there. We went throughout the city and we closed off there with the background of the city.
That's awesome.
And I just
that's
did
a
that
great, obviously
us,
a great you know? View looking back.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's a great city. You should be very proud. That's a fun town.
And you're going to a great game because that environment, the Army Navy, you've been there before, but now you get to actually fully enjoy the game, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think you'll have a good time in Philly. And if anybody says what's up, just go, yo, right back. All right.
That's what I go back to with. Okay.
Yeah.
Yo. Okay. I can do that.
Herbie, have fun, man. Am I going to have you on SportsCenter tomorrow?
I don't know. I hope so. I get my assignments, usually later today. So hopefully I'll be with you.
If not, I'm sure we'll catch up, later in the week and then talk on the podcast next Monday.
All right, man. Look forward to it.
Of course, I want to thank, Kirk Herbstreit for joining us as he, wrapped up his thoughts on the playoff ranking and what's ahead. As he goes to Philadelphia, I also want to thank our sponsors, AT&T and Allstate. Big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk, always doing a great job on the other side. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it.